Hare Krishna, everyone. Good morning. Thank you so much for coming. Today we're reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And we're reading from Madhya Leela. So we're reading from chapter number 16, entitled The Lord's Attempt to Go to Vrindavan. And we're reading 68, and then we'll stop at 72, where there's a fairly lengthy purport. All right, so just the context of the beautiful Chaitanya Charitamrita. So as Maharaj was explaining yesterday, Mahaprabhu has taken sannyas. So the sannyasi keeps moving. Part of the Dharma. Rolling stone gathers no moss. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to Puri, then the devotees are overjoyed because they know that's where they can get an opportunity. To meet a sannyasi is a small window of opportunity. Got to be in the right place at the right time. So when the opportunity comes, they all go. So they go to meet Mahaprabhu. And then we hear of all the beautiful interactions that Mahaprabhu has with his devotees. Jiva Goswami writes in Gopal Champu, he says, I heard about Krishna and I heard about his devotees, but still it didn't melt my icy cold heart. He said, but then when I heard about the interactions between the Lord and his devotees, then my heart melted. This is very beautiful. You can hear about Krishna's qualities, you can hear about the devotees, but when you hear about how they exchange love, then this really conquers your heart. So so they're all exchanging with Mahaprabhu. Sorry, got shifted. So they're all hearing about Mahaprabhu. So now we're hearing about a very beautiful interaction, a very famous interaction of the residents of Kulinagram with Mahaprabhu. So we will see what they ask. So text number 68, I'll just read it myself. Tanra vidaya dila prabhu kari alingan, eimata vidaya dila shabha bhaktagan. It's okay, I'll just, for time. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Nityananda Prabhu and bade him farewell. He then bade farewell to all the other devotees. Okay, so now we're getting into the pastime. So, residents of Kulinagram. There are many districts around Navadvip in the Bengal area where Mahaprabhu's devotees had gathered. So one of those places was Kulinagram. So they all came to meet Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri, and they were coming every year. So now we're hearing. Kulinagrami purvavat kaila nivedan prabhu agya kore amar kartavya sadhan. As in the previous year, one of the inhabitants of Kulinagram submitted a petition to the Lord saying, my Lord, kindly tell me what my duty is and how I should execute it. Prabhu kohe Vaishnav seva nama kartik sankirtan duikara sigrapave Shri Krishna charan. The Lord replied, you should engage yourself in the service of the servants of Krishna and always chant the holy name of Krishna. If you do these two things, you will very soon attain the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. Den hokahe kei Vaishnav ki tandra lakshan tabehashi kohe prabhu jani tandraman. The inhabitant of Kulinagram said, please let me know who is actually a Vaishnav and what his symptoms are. Understanding his mind, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled and gave the following reply. So this is already very instructive. When you come to meet a saintly person, in this case, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Person, one must take advantage. And how do you take advantage? Usually you do two things. Either you ask for an instruction or you ask a question. So the first thing the resident of Kulinagram did when he came to Mahaprabhu is he asked an instruction. And then he asked a question. So instructions and questions, these are connecting one to the saintly people very, very powerfully. Therefore, this is recommended. When I was very young, 15, I don't know if that's very young, I started coming to programs, so I met the Swamis for the first time, and then the devotees told me, you got to ask for an instruction. I'm like, what's an instruction? You got to ask the Swami something. So that program was Bhakti Charaswami, and I asked him for an instruction, His Holiness Bhakti Chara Maharaj, and he gave me a very beautiful instruction. He said, you should make as many friends in Krishna consciousness as possible. And I thought, I was expecting him to say something more, you know. And I realized that was such a powerful instruction. And then some months later, I was at a program with Shivaram Maharaj. So the devotees told me again, you got to ask him for an instruction. Shivaram Maharaj is a little harder to approach than Bhakti Chara Maharaj. Like, Bhakti Chara Maharaj is still kind of small, not very cheerful. Shivaram Maharaj, towering figure, super serious. So they said, no, yes, okay, ask the Swami. So I went to Shivaram Maharaj, I asked an instruction. And in the most serious tone, the serious and deep tone of Shivaram Maharaj, he looked at me and he said, I said, Maharaj, instruction. He looked at me in the most serious way and said, don't be boring. And he said it so seriously, it was like, don't be boring. So these two instructions stayed with me for a long time, and I realized they were unassuming instructions. Make as many friends as you can and don't be boring. And later on I realized that so much of Krishna consciousness lies in friendship and adventure. So they were actually, don't underestimate the instruction that you get from someone. It may seem like, oh, well, you know, what's that about? But very powerful. So the instructions, they ask for instruction, and then you have to ask a question. So they ask the question. Their question is very important, very simple. Sometimes the most simple questions can elicit the deepest answers. And they ask the question, how do I know who's a Vaishnava? That's a good question. All right. So they asked this question 3 years in a row. And they got three different answers. So now they're asking the second year. The first year they asked, and Mahaprabhu says, anyone who chants the holy name once is a Vaishnava. That was the answer the first year. So they came back the second year, and now they're asking the second time, well, who's a Vaishnava? Well, I told you. No, now there's a deeper answer. So you see, the saintly persons, they will answer according to one's adhikar, isn't it? Therefore, the same person, the same question can be asked to a saintly person. They can answer in many ways because they are hearing the unheard. They are not just responding to a question, but they're responding to the disposition of the person. And therefore, as one's qualification increases, the depth of the answer that you get from a Vaishnava will also increase. Therefore, clearly, Mahaprabhu is now telling them something deeper. So this is his answer, second year. You can repeat after me. Krishna nama nirantara janhara vadane. Se Vaishnav Shrestha Bhaja Tanhara Charane. Krishna Nama Nirandara Janhara Vadane. Se Vaishnav Shrestha Bhaja Tanhara Charane. Krishna Nama Nirandara Janhara Vedane. Se Vaishnav Shrestha Bhaja Tanhara Charane. Krishna Nama nirantara janhara vadane. Ladies, Krishna Nama Nirantara Janhara Vedane. Krishna Nama, the holy name of Lord Krishna, Nirantara, incessantly, Janhara, whose Vadane, in the mouth, say such a person, Vaishnava Shrestha, a first class Vaishnav, Bhaja, worship, Tanhara Charane, his lotus feet. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Slightly long purport, so please follow. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that any Vaishnav who is constantly chanting the holy name of the Lord should be considered to have attained the second platform of Vaishnavism. Such a devotee is superior to a neophyte Vaishnav who has just learned to chant the holy name of the Lord. A neophyte devotee simply tries to chant the holy name, whereas the advanced devotee is accustomed to chanting and takes pleasure in it. Such an advanced devotee is called a Madhyama Bhagavata, which indicates that he has attained the intermediate stage between the neophyte and the perfect devotee. Generally, a devotee in the intermediate stage becomes a preacher. A neophyte devotee or an ordinary person should worship the Madhyama Bhagavata, who is a via medium. In his Upadeshamrita 5, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Pranati bhischa bhajanta misham. This means that the Madhyama Adhikari devotees should exchange obeisances between themselves. The word Nirantara, meaning without cessation, continuously, constantly, is very important in this verse. The word antara means interval. If one has desires other than the desire to perform devotional service, in other words, if one sometimes engages in devotional service and sometimes strives for sense gratification, his service will be interrupted. A pure devotee, therefore, should have no desire other than to serve Krishna. He should be above creative activity and speculative knowledge. In his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.1.11, Srila Rupa Goswami says, Anya bhilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam anukulyena krishna no silanam bhakti rutama. This is the platform of pure devotional service. One should not be motivated by fruitive activity or mental speculation, but should simply serve Krishna favorably, that is, first-class devotion. Another meaning of antara is this body. The body is an impediment to self-realization because it is always engaged in sense gratification. Similarly, antara means money. If money is not used in Krishna's service, it is also an impediment. Antara also means janata, people in general. The association of ordinary persons may destroy the principles of devotional service. Similarly, antara may mean greed. Greed to acquire more money or enjoy more sense gratification. Finally, the word antara may also mean atheistic ideas by which one considers the temple deity to be made of stone, wood or gold. All of these are impediments. The deity in the temple is not material. He is the supreme personality of Godhead himself. Similarly, considering the spiritual master an ordinary human being, Gurusu, Naramati, is also an impediment. Nor should one consider a Vaishnava a member of a particular caste or nation. Nor should a Vaishnava be considered material. Charanamrita should not be considered ordinary drinking water, and the holy name of the Lord should not be considered an ordinary sound vibration. Nor should one look on Lord Krishna as an ordinary human being, for he is the origin of all Vishnu tattvas, nor should one regard the Supreme Lord as a demigod. Intermingling the spiritual with the material causes one to look on transcendence as material and the mundane as spiritual. This is all due to a poor fund of knowledge. One should not consider Lord Vishnu and things related to him as being different. All this is offensive. Take a deep breath after all of that. That's a lot of stuff. Krishna, you can go wrong in a lot of ways, huh? In the Bhakti Sandarbha 265, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Namekam yasya vachi smarana patagatam ityado deha dravinadi nimitaka pashanda shabdena chadasa aparada lakshyante pashanda mayatva tesham. In the verse beginning, Namekam yasya, we find the word pashanda, godlessness. The word literally indicates misuse of one's body or property. But in that verse, it implies the 10 offenses against the Lord's holy name, since each of these leads to such godless behavior. The Mayavadis look on Vishnu and Vaishnavas imperfectly due to their poor fund of knowledge, and this is condemned. In Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.46, the intermediate Vaishnava is described as follows. Ishvare tadadhineshu balisheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri prikapopeksha yakaroti samadhyama. The intermediate Vaishnava has to love God, make friends with the devotees, instruct the innocent and reject jealous people. These are the four functions of the Vaishnava in the intermediate stage. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 22.64, Sri Sanatana Goswami is taught, Shraddhavana jana hoy bhakti adhikari uttama madhyama kanishta shraddha anusari. One who is faithful is a proper candidate for devotional service. In terms of one's degree of faith in devotional service, one is a first class, second class or neophyte Vaishnav. Shastra yukti nahi jane drida shraddhavan madhyama adhikarishe maha bhagyavan. One who has attained the intermediate stage is not very advanced in shastric knowledge, but he has firm faith in the Lord. Such a person is very fortunate to be situated on the intermediate platform. Rati prema taratamye bhakta taratama. Attraction and love of God are the ultimate goal of devotional service. The degrees of such attraction and love distinguish the different stages of devotion, neophyte, intermediate, and perfectional. An intermediate devotee is greatly attached to chanting the holy name, and by chanting he is elevated to the platform of love. If one chants the holy name of the Lord with great attachment, he can understand his position as an eternal servant of the spiritual master. Are the Vaishnavas and Krishna himself. Thus, the intermediate Vaishnava considers himself Krishna Das, Krishna's servant. He therefore preaches Krishna consciousness to the innocent neophytes and stresses the importance of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. An intermediate devotee can identify the non-devotee or motivated devotee. The motivated devotee or the non-devotee are on the material platform and they are called Prakrita, Shishiradha Gokulananda Ki. The intermediate devotee does not mix with such materialistic people. However, he understands that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everything related to him are on the same transcendental platform. Actually, none of them are mundane. Okay, got it? That's a lot of information. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada is the consummate scholar. He's able to bring so much in. Okay, let me try to condense some of the points here and then see what thoughts you may have. So the residents of Kulinagram have come. They're asking Mahaprabhu a very profound question. Who is a Vaishnav? So Mahaprabhu has answered, a Vaishnav is anyone. We chant the holy name once, Vaishnav. Taken Krishna's names. Nama Chintamani. Krishna's name is like a touchstone. They're blessed, they're Vaishnavas. Second year, Mahaprabhu says, who is a Vaishnav? Always chanting. Satatam kirtayantomam yatantascha dhrida vrita. Dhrida, determined, vrata, big, commitment. Okay, great, got it. Who is a Vaishnav? Ask the third year. Not just one who hears the holy name once, not just one who's chanting the holy name constantly, but one who by their very presence inspires other people to chant. Have you ever been around such a person? Just by their taste for the holy name, you get some taste also. They inspire. They're that rooted in Nama Ruchi. So he says that is a real Vaishnav. They're so powerful that just by being in their vicinity, you're like, I know what I need to do in my life. So later on, Kaviraj Goswami will explain these are Vaishnava, Vaishnavatara, and Vaishnavatama. So there are three levels. Vaishnava, anyone who hears the holy name. Vaishnavatara, intermediate, one who's always chanting the holy name. Vaishnavatama, one who by their presence inspires other people to chant the holy name. And so, within Vaishnav community, there are grades. And this is basically the whole theme of Prabhupada's purport, that there are gradations. Not everyone is the same. The first misconception when we come to spiritual life is that everyone's the same. So if they're a devotee, if they chant, they're coming to the temple, everyone's like a level playing field, everyone's the same. Everyone's a pure devotee. You think like that in the beginning. And then you realize, maybe not. But the second misconception is that we start making gradations on devotees, which is natural, but we do it on the wrong basis. We realize everyone's not the same. Some are more, some are still beginning. But what we do is we make the distinction on the wrong category. Popularity. More. No. Productivity. Gets a lot done, this guy. Great. Doesn't necessarily mean he's more advanced. Power. Guy's got a big office. Great. Doesn't mean you're advanced. Position. Prestige. So many things we base our gradations on. Misconception. So these two misconceptions need to be removed by Shastra. So Shastra said, misconception one, everyone's not the same. Remove it. Misconception two, there is gradation, but do the gradation on the right thing. So therefore, you'll find so much of scripture is about grading devotees. We say, like, why do we grade devotees? It's like, actually, you see, it's a very natural thing in the world that as soon as you meet someone, you try to grade them. In colloquial English, they say, you size them up. Isn't it? You meet someone for the first time, it's like, okay, you have to figure it out. What's this person about? In my short, illustrious material career in the corporate world, which lasted a totality of a few hours, I noticed one thing very quickly in the corporate world. As soon as you meet someone in the corporate world, you're trying to size them up. Yeah, so you're trying to find out who's the uttama in Accenture. Like, who's the uttama? Who's the top gun here? Right? Who can help? But the thing is, in material life, when we try to grade people, we're grading people because we want to exploit, we want to enjoy, we want to compete, we want to defeat. And that's why people grade people in the material world. In spiritual life, we also grade people. But we grade people for a different reason. We grade them because we want to know, how can I serve this person? We grade people because we want to know, how can I help them to fulfill their deepest desire? We grade people because we want to know, now I'm coming in contact with this person, how can I have the most spiritually inspiring interaction? If you don't grade the devotee properly, you will not be able to take advantage of the association. Therefore, sometimes we meet devotees and we think, why can't I connect to this person? Because we have missed the grading. We're not treating them according to where they are and where we are. So, in one sense, it feels like grading and judging is a very dangerous thing. And actually, it is a very dangerous thing. But when your motivation for grading or judging is for service and for inspiring interaction, and when you're guided by Shastra, it becomes a very, very powerful thing. And so, here Mahaprabhu is helping the residents of Kulinagram to grade. There are many types of Vaishnavas. And you need to know this, because sometimes we get bewildered. Oh, a Vaishnav did this. That means it's, you know, what to do, you know. But yes, there are different levels of Vaishnavas. So, remember, Vaishnava, then Vaishnavatara, and then Vaishnava Dhamma. This terminology, Tara, Tama, is used many times in Shastra. If you look, for example, in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, then in a commentary on a purport, I think in the fourth chapter, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur uses this terminology. He says there is Mahat, Mahatara, Mahatama, and Ati Mahatama. So Mahat, he says, means a great soul. But what specifically it means, a Mahat is someone who sees someone's bad qualities, but sees that there's the potential it will turn into good qualities. That's like, you know, that's a very elevated state, that someone looks at someone else, sees an imperfection and says, but no, it could become good. That's a Mahat. Then Chakravarti Thakur says a Mahatara is someone who sees that there are bad qualities in someone, but they don't even like look at it. They overlook it and focus on the good. That's even more elevated. Then he says the Mahatama is one who can't even see the bad. They can't see it. They can't see bad in anyone. They can only see the good. So you think like, wow, what can be higher than that? He says there's higher than even that. Ati Mahatma. He says the Ati Mahatma is so elevated that even when there's no good, they make good. So he said there are levels. And then Chakravarti Thakur says, and it goes the other way as well. There's a sadhu, the unsaintly. There's asadutara, the even more unsaintly. Then there's asadutama, the very topmost unsaintly. And then he says there's atiyasadutama, the guy who's basically out of it. So he says asadhu, not a sadhu, asadhu, the unsaintly. He says is someone who sees others have good qualities, but he's thinking soon they will turn into bad qualities. Ah, this guy's good at a few instruments, but soon he's going to become proud. Asadhu tama. He says that. This guy's got some good qualities, but he overlooks the good qualities. What's the bad things in this guy? Asadhu tama. This guy's got good qualities, but I can't see anything. I only see his bad qualities. And atiyasadhu tama. Make it up, defame, and character assassinate a person even when there's nothing wrong. That's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. So like this, there are many, many distinctions, many, many ways to grade. But here, Srila Prabhupada in the purport is basically saying there is kind of like a universal way to define or grade in Vaishnava circles, and that is what we call Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam. This is like a very standard. In one sense, these terminologies are universal terminologies. Kanista basically means beginner. Madhyam means intermediate. And Uttam means topmost. So it's kind of like universal terminology. So if you look at Shastra, then basically there are three main ways in which Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam are graded. It's good for you to know. One is found in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Another one is found in Sri Upadeshamrita. And another one is found in Srimad Bhagavatam. Three ways to see who is a Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam. Okay, so I'll share that with you. So then you can grade carefully. Okay, so the first way in which these three are graded are in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Prabhupada quotes the verse in the purport, Shraddhavana hoya jani bhakti adhikari uttama madhyama kanistha shraddha anusari. So the gradation of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is based on faith. One way. One way you can understand where someone is based on faith. The second way you can understand is from the Sri Upadeshamrita, Krishneti yasya giritam manashadriyeta. So this I'll explain in a minute, but I'm just giving you the overview. This gradation is based on commitment. Who has made a commitment? That's one way, another way to grade someone. And the final way of the Bhagavatam to grade someone is based on vision. So what is the spiritual vision of this person? Prabhupada quotes again the verse, Ishvara tadadhineshu balisesu dvisatsu cha. He's explaining how a Madhyam sees everything. So, broad overview, why we grade? The general gradation is Kanista, Madhyam, Uttam. There are three main ways in Gaudiya circles to delineate these. The first one is based on faith. The second one is based on commitment. And the third one is based on vision. Okay, so let's go one by one. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is explaining there's Kanista, Madhyam, and Uttam. And the way you understand is by their faith. Shraddha. So, who is the Kanista? Komala Shraddha. Very soft faith, weak faith. Anything can shake them. I was watching YouTube and I saw a video by the Cosmic Skeptic. And now I don't know, I'm not sure. Good channel, by the way. It's good to wrestle with ideas. Or, you know, oh, something I heard, something happened in ISKCON, this person, how is it possible? Now my faith is shaking because this happened, this controversy. It's Komala Shraddha. And why is the Kanista having very weak faith? Because there's no Shastra Yukti. Siddhanta Boliye Chite Nakara Alash Iha Hoite Krishna Lage Sudrida Manash. You have to discuss Shastra, you have to understand philosophy, you have to understand the Tattva. Because Sudrida Manash, then the mind becomes very strong, you cannot be moved. But the Kanista, weak faith, weak knowledge. Madhyam, good knowledge, good enough to convince themselves, and therefore good faith, but not good enough to convince someone else. So therefore the Madhyam is good. Even they may hear things, this, that, but they don't get shaken. But if someone engages in an argument with them, they can't establish the truth of Krishna consciousness because they don't have that level of proficiency yet. So Madhyam means good enough knowledge to convince themselves but not others. And Uttam means one who has incredibly Shastriya Shraddha. This is also explained. Svabhaviki Shraddha, Jiva Goswami says. So this is a type of faith which is based on very strong philosophical conviction. And if someone comes in the midst of such a person, these Vaishnavas are dangerous. Because they will remove your doubts just by their conviction. Because also when a Vaishnava speaks, it's not just what they speak from their Shastra Yukti, but it's their emitting their own conviction, their own inspiration. And therefore such words are very powerful. Bhagavatam says, Tato du sanga mutsrijya sadhu satseta buddhiman shanta evasya chindanti mano vyasangam ukti bi. The words of a saintly person are razor sharp. Because manovyasanga mukti bi, they can cut all your attachments because it's based on Shastra and it's based on realization. Therefore, Mahabharata says the words of a politician are like butter, but their heart is like a razor. And the words of a sadhu are like a razor, but their heart is like butter. Soft heart, but when these guys speak, they really go for it. I remember being in certain sannyasis' classes, elevated devotees. It felt like this guy was launching a machine gun at me. It was like a launcher attack on your false ego. Yeah, it's powerful. The words of a saintly person because it's speaking Shastra. So Prabhupada was like that. Bhadranarayan Maharaj tells a story. Prabhupada went to Caltech, California Tech. Big university. So Prabhupada, he was giving a class and there was some Sanskrit professor there. So, you know, the professors, they study, but sometimes they're a little bit dry, you know. Have some experience, a little bit of experience. This professor, Prabhupada gave, is explaining the glories of the holy name. Harinam, Harinam, Harinam. So this Sanskrit professor, he was like, oh, Swamiji, Gyan, no? Quote some Shastra. So he was making some intellectual argument explaining that bhakti is something lesser. No, you have to go higher. So Prabhupada just looked at him, Bhadrinarayan Maharaj says, and Prabhupada launched into an attack. Puranas, Shrutis, Samhitas, you know, Goswami literature, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. Bhadrinarayan Maharaj said it was like he was like, every verse was like a punch in a boxing match. And he was just boom, 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 boom. Prabhupada just... And then Bhadrinarayan Maharaj said at the end of the Prabhupada's kind of outpouring of Shastra, this person looked at him. Prabhupada looked at him and said, any questions? He looked at Prabhupada, he said, can we have kirtan? It was like, there ain't no questions to ask here. Let's just get on with the real thing here. Because Gyanavan, Mam Prapadya Te. What, you think you know so much? If you're a real Gyanavan, you surrender. Murkatumi tomar nahik vedandadi kar Krishna mantra japa sada e mantra sar. Nimai Pandit was the height of scholarship and his spiritual master told him, Murkatumi, you're a fool. Tomar nahik vedanta adhikar. You have no adhikar to study Vedanta. What you will learn? Vedeshta sarve raham eva vedyo vedanta krit vedavit eva chaham. So anyway, this is the first way you understand who is elevated, who has faith, who has knowledge. Second way, you understand who is elevated, who has made a commitment. Yeah? It's practical. Those who make the biggest commitments are advanced. That's what NOI is saying. So NOI says, Krishneti yasya giritam manashadriyeta. If one chants the holy name now and again, I chant a bit here, I chant a bit there, in, out, take it all about, you know, like a little bit, like very like, okay, I'm doing it, I'm playing with this, it's nice, it's a kind of, okay, so then Rupa Goswami says, manasadriyeta, honor them. In the mind. And then he says, Dikshashti, Chen Pranatibis, Chabajanta Misham. Is that? Yep. Chabajanta Misham. If one has taken Diksha, initiated devotee. So sometimes we make, sometimes we play down initiation, like it doesn't matter if you initiate, that doesn't mean that you're, and of course it doesn't mean, but if you take initiation, that's a commitment. And that means advancement. It's powerful. Diksha is not just like, okay, I just did it, it's powerful. Divyam gyanam yato dadyat kuryat papasya shangshayam tato diksheti saprokta deshikes tatva kovida. Shastra says, what happens when you take diksha? Divyam gyanam. There's a transfer of transcendental knowledge. And kuryat papasya shangshayam. You have some pap, you have some sin, kshaya. You get a clean slate. Get another chance. So it's significant. Someone had just taken initiation recently here and they told me, they said, I walked on, taking from His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj, he said, I walked on. And even in the 2 minutes after when I walked off the stage and received, I felt different. So Diksha is powerful. There's something that happens in that exchange of commitment, which if taken very seriously is powerful. Like I'm sitting here actually, I got initiated right here on this spot. So that was a wonderful moment. It took me a long time to get initiated. People thought I was a Ritvik. Each to his own. So it took me a bit of time to get initiated. Anyway, let me tell you about my initiation now. So anyway, I finally, by Krishna's grace, Brahmande Brahmite, I met my glorious spiritual master. And so I got initiated here, and my whole idea was that it should be small, low-key. This is generally my... I ended up getting initiated on Ram Navami Day, or festival day, which is nice, but there were so many people here. And I was the only one getting initiated. Well, like this. I got some funny karma. I always end up like this, you know, like in some. So I was here. It was a packed temple room, Ram Navami day. Vishwamba Prabhu was there. He spoke at my initiation. He put the neck beads on me. Yes, yes. Vishwamba Prabhu was. That's why I'm surviving. So I was completely on the mental platform. Completely on the mental platform. I was just like, and I was here. It was all like a daze. You know, I sat here at the front. I felt like my subtle body was like revolving around the chandelier, you know. I was kind of like just trying to hold it all together. Then they told you, okay, get up, and then you have to go through the crowd, and you know, you're wearing a chador, and you have to try and hold it all together. Pretend like you know what you're doing, you know, like, yeah, I'm a natural, you know. I was very... Anyway, so then I sat down, I came here, I paid obeisances. So then there's that moment where you have to do your vows and all that. So it's a highly volatile time, you know. That's like, you can really lose it at that time. So I was praying, Krishna, you know. You know, things can come out in a different way, you know. I follow 16 regs and 4 rounds, you know. Something of this nature. These things can happen, you know, under pressure. The things I've heard devotees say on initiations is like, my God. One devotee was giving all these extra vows, and I'll do this, and I'll do this, and I'll do this. I was like, relax, sannyas is later. Down the line, you know, relax for now. So either people get very excited, or they don't know what to say, or, you know, they say it wrong, you know. One devotee. I don't know if I should say it now. I'll say this. I'll skip that story. So anyway, so I sat down here. So I'm going to get back to the class in a minute, but I'll just finish the story. It's a good story. So I sat down here. So then I said my vows. I held it together. It was impressive. I held it together. So I said it, and then it came to that moment, you know, the moment where you think like, I hope I don't get a really long name or something. You know? So Maharaj was just about to give me my beads. And at that moment, when he was just about to say my name and give me my beads, someone went past the hundi and had a massive carrier bag of coins. And what they did is they emptied the coins. So what happened is I was about to get my name, and right then it was like, boom, all these coins. So it was like, you know, in the casino, you get like when you hit the jackpot, you know. When I was a kid, I used to play the slot machines. So I don't know, like as soon as I heard that, I remembered the slot machines. And then I was like, I just made a vow here, no gambling, you know, like it's just like, this is all not fitting together, you know? Anyway, so then all these coins came down. So then Gauri Prabhu, he was the temple president at that time, he just stood up, he said, this is a sign. He's going to bring a lot of money to the temple. So then my spiritual master, he stood up and he said, no, no. He will get everyone else to give their money. So that, what to do? That was an instruction on my initiation day. So if I come knocking on your door asking for money, don't mind, no? I'm just taking my spiritual master's order as the life and soul. But why did I say that whole story? Diksha is powerful. I felt a very deep transformation through that. So it's a very serious thing. When Kadamba Kanana Maharaj was to take initiation from His Holiness Jayadvaita Maharaj, who doesn't accept really many disciples, Jayadvaita Maharaj looked at Kadamba Kanana Maharaj when he asked him, can you be my spiritual master? And Jayadvaita Maharaj looked at him and said, as good as God. Are you ready? As good as God. Shakshad Hari. So it's very, if one takes a commitment with deep, something like Diksha, with deep faith, deep conviction, then it's powerful, Rupa Goswami says. So, Pranatibis. If someone has taken Diksha, they've taken that kind of commitment, you should bow. You should offer obeisances. They deserve respect. And then he says, Shushru Shaya Bhajata Vigyam Ananyam Anya. And then Nindati Shunya Rida Ipshita Sangha Labdhya. And if you come across someone who has such a commitment that they're always chanting, they're always dedicated, and they're Ninda Shunyam, their heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize someone else. Sangha Labdhya, grab their association. Spend as much time as you can with them. It's interesting, like Rupa Goswami just pulls that one out of nowhere. Ninda Shunya Ipshita Rida Ipshita Sangha Labdhya. Why? Because the Uttam is on the highest platform, but is thinking, how can everyone else become an Uttam? And therefore they're completely devoid of the propensity to criticize, because as soon as you criticize, you drag people down. So an Uttam is always thinking, how can I lift people up? And therefore completely devoid of the propensity to criticize. Even when there's a problem, they try to do it in such a way that they uplift the situation. So this is another way in which you understand Kanishtam, Madhyam, Uttam. And the final way is the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam tells you, how do you understand who's Kanishtam, Madhyam, Uttam? The vision. What's the vision of a Kanista? Archayam eva hareye pujamya shradaye hate natad bhakte shuchanyeshu sa bhakta prakrita shmrita. What's their spiritual vision? They come in front of the deities and they have reverence for the deities. But they can't see Krishna in the hearts of all the other people. Then what's the point if you offend all the devotees and you're worshipping the deities with great faith? Sa bhakta prakrita ashmita. This very beginning devotee. Their vision is they can only see God in the temple, in the deity. They can't perceive the presence of divinity anywhere else. And then, who is the madhyam? Ishvare tadadhineshu balishesu dvisatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyama. Prabhupada quotes this in the verse. Who is a madhyam? Their vision is that when someone is inimical, they just quietly avoid them. When someone is innocent, their vision is, this person has the opportunity, let me help them. When someone is a devotee, practicing, serious, then maitri, let me make friendship. Let us walk this path together. And prema, for the Lord, there I invest all my love. So they are able to visualize divinity in each place in different ways, and then what they do is they respond accordingly. And then who is the Uttam? What is the vision of a Uttam? Sarvabhuteshu ya pasyet bhagavat bhavam atmanah bhutani. Bhutani yanti bhuteshu sa esha bhagavato uttama. The Uttam, this is a mystical vision. The Uttam sees everyone is already a devotee. This is mystical. Like, for example, if a Uttam saw all the Sankirtan devotees doing all these austerities on the street from morning to evening, you know, trying to give out Krishna, they'll be like, they wouldn't be able to relate to it. They'll be like, what are you guys doing? These guys are already devotees. You're going up and down the country doing all, they're already devotees. What is this vision? Therefore, it said the Uttam has to come to Madhyam to preach. Because they basically see everyone's already a devotee. There's no impetus to preach. They're already a devotee. So you may say, like, how does this work? So I thought about this a lot. What does this mean? The closest example I could think of is like a mother. Like, your child may be like the most, you know, like, nefarious, like troublemaking, mischief-making child. But in the eyes of the mother, there's so much love. They're just like, oh, and he's so wonderful. It's like in the vision of a Uttam, the vision of Krishna that they see within each person is so radiant, is so effulgent, that they can't see anything else. So it's like someone may be completely out of it by our estimation. And Uttam is just seeing that the Supreme Lord is with this person, and just look at the Lord is shining there. They can't see anything else. So their love is so great that almost the love blinds them. It's like that sometimes with mothers, it's like, or fathers or whoever. It's like the love blinds you. It's like I remember when I wanted to join the temple, you know, World War III at home. You know, so like I remember once I had like a massive argument with my mother, you know, it was like, it went through all the emotions. It's like anger, crying, you know, neglect, all those things. It went through that whole, so we had this whole like dramatic interaction. And she said, ah, that's it. No, I said, that's it. And the amazing thing is, like, 45 minutes later, she had cooked this, like, massive feast for me. It was just like, I was like, this doesn't make sense. Like, we just had a, you know, like, if I would have a son, you know, and they would do what I did, I would just be like, on your bike, cook your own lunch, you know, get out of here, you know. But it's almost like when the love is so great, it's like you see beyond everything and you just like, whatever, this is. So I think an Uttam, my understanding is that's what an Uttam is. The vision is of Krishna is so bright that it silences everything else. So the residents of Kulinagram are asking, how do I know who is a Vaishnav? Mahaprabhu says, Vaishnava, Vaishnavatara, Vaishnavatama. There are grades. Prabhupada in the purport says there's Kanista, Madhyam, Uttam. And the various scriptures help us to understand how we understand who is a Kanista, Madhyam, Uttam. One is based on faith and knowledge. One is based on commitment. And one is based on vision. There are footnotes to this, I won't go into the details. Like, for example, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu's division is not technically about who is a bhakta, it's about who is a adhikari. So there's a difference between a uttama adhikari and a uttama bhakta. It's like a subtle technical distinction you have to also understand. An adhikari means that they're not necessarily at that level of realization, but they have the eligibility. So therefore, one who is a uttam adhikari is not necessarily on that level of realization, but their faith and knowledge mean they have the eligibility to practice in a very powerful way that will take them there. But in the Bhagavatam's delineation, we're talking about uttama bhagavata. Uttama Bhakta, someone who has this realization. So that's also, we should understand, that's an important distinction. For example, when Prabhupada says you should accept a Uttama Adhikari Guru. In other words, one who is having faith, knowledge, one who is able to remove doubts. That's the duty of a spiritual master. So many other things can be said on this. I didn't mention anything about Mahaprabhu's actual answer, which is that a Vaishnava is always chanting. So maybe I'll just say one last thing about that. You'll know who's advanced because they'll have taste for chanting. How long can somebody stay in spiritual sound vibration without their mind wandering to something else? That's a very, very clear sign of how advanced you are. We have examples in our tradition of devotees who just chanted literally all the time. Haridas Thakur, all the time. Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji, you can read his book. What is his book? So there's a book about his life story written by Babu Prabhu. You can look at his life. Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji, Srila Prabhupada's contemporary, was a scholar, but practically never spoke to anyone about anything, only chanted. When someone would ask him a question, he would just chuckle and chant Hare Krishna. For him, that was the answer. And then even in contemporary times, we hear about, nowadays I'm looking at Prabhupada's memories, and the devotees speaking about Vishnujan Maharaj. This personality is something else. He would chant 10, 12, 13 hours every day. 4 hours straight, leading a kirtan on Harinam. Explain his hands were getting ripped up, so he would wear these gloves and put coins by the fingertips so that when he played the mridanga he could play for 4 hours. And everyone who you hear speak about Vishnujan, they say when you were in his kirtan you could just be there for like just endlessly. We have these examples of great souls. Even if you go to Vrindavan today, you meet so many devotees who are just chanting all day. Indradyumna Maharaj once tells a story he heard of one sadhu who was basically chanting, I think, 192 rounds a day or something. So he decided, let me go and see him. So he went to his bhajan kutir. So he came into the bhajan kutir. This sadhu was there, 192 rounds a day. 22 hours of chanting, day after day. So Indradyumna Maharaj came in, and so he started speaking to this person. It's a translation because... So as I remember, Indradyumna Maharaj asked him, do you have any problems when you chant? So this devotee, you know what he said? He said, no problems. Just one thing. Sarpa. He said, sarpa. What do you mean? He said, snake. What do you mean, snake? He said, every day when I chant here, at one point in the day, a massive snake comes in. And the snake comes into the hut, and it comes up to me, and it wraps itself around me. He said, what do you do then? He said, Harinam. Harinam. He said, I just carry on chanting. And then he said, after some time, it goes away. So next time he feels sleepy while chanting, you just think sarpa. Imagine that. You're just sitting in the thing. Every single day this snake comes. I mean, these snakes are serious, yeah? You see, it's interesting. In Shastra, Krishna's hands are compared to snakes. So you think, like, why does Shastra compare Krishna's hands to snakes? So the acharyas give the commentary that the reason Krishna's hands are compared to snakes is because Krishna is incredibly strong, But he's not strong like this, you know, universe people who have these, like, you know, I won't show you mine, maybe the next life, you know. But you know what I'm saying? It's not like one of those bodybuilders. Krishna doesn't have a bodybuilder type of body. So the acharyas say Krishna's hands are like snakes. Why? Because they're smooth, they're soft, but they're incredibly powerful. One of these snakes, when it comes around you, you're going to get finished. They strangle you. And this devotee just carries on chanting. What was I? No problems, just little salpa. Little salpa thing. So we have these examples. So it's all real, it's all possible. If we can't chant all day, then we try to at least glorify Krishna all day. And that's another type of kirtan. And Prabhupada knew that many people would not be able to chant all the time. And so do service, tell people about Krishna, engage yourself, and in that way you're also doing kirtan all the time because your life is for glorifying Krishna. So ultimately we want to get to that point where whole life is for glorifying Krishna. What else is there? What else is going to count at the end of the day? All right, I've gone over time. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki. I don't know if I should take questions because maybe it's... Shall I take one or two questions? Okay, maybe one or two. And then, okay, yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. My question is, you mentioned from Kanish to Uttama and many methods on how you can do that, faith, commitment, vision, chanting. Which one should one take? Which is better? You can't have vision and then think, okay, I'll have the vision. I'll work on my vision.
No, we take all of these. All of these are different angles. And generally these things are also interconnected. If one has knowledge of Shastra, then they'll have faith. If one has faith, then they'll make a commitment. And if they make a commitment, they get the vision. So these things in one sense are separate, they're also interconnected. And so in our own lives, we focus on all of these things. We try to increase our Shastric knowledge, our faith. We make external commitments, we take vows. We have to make a commitment. See, like if you go your whole life but you don't make a commitment, then it's going to be difficult. So external commitments raise us to a platform that we're not naturally at, with a view to becoming situated at that platform of consciousness. So we make commitments and yeah, we develop a vision. We try to see the good in others. We try to see Krishna in others. All of these things have to go on simultaneously. So the scriptures are so powerful because they give you the entire blueprint of how to basically awaken your bhakti. Rupa Goswami's work is like, it's unparalleled. Because Mahaprabhu's love was like a waterfall. It was brilliant, extraordinary. But have you ever tried to take shower in a waterfall? Good luck. You can't, it's too much. Mahaprabhu's love was so... it was so tremendous that for most it was unrelatable. So he said that what Rupa Goswami did is he took the waterfall of Mahaprabhu's love and he excavated it into an ocean. The Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And an ocean anyone can bathe in.
So these scriptures must guide our journey, must guide our life, and all these perspectives are important for us. And they're not separate. You'll see that they all complement each other. Like that. Is that okay?
All right. Just a question. So we see that the residents of Kulinagram, you mentioned that year after year they're asking Mahaprabhu the same question. So we see sometimes in our practice of Krishna consciousness, we're always searching for the new, you know, what's new, what's different, you know, a different angle. But how can we stop that? Because we see the Kulinagram residents, they're just asking the same question. So there's maturity in that.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question. Thank you for asking that. When the sages are hearing Bhagavatam at Naimisharanya, then they say, Vayam tu na vitre pyama uttama shloka vikrame yachrinvatam rasa jnanam swadu swadu padei padei. A very beautiful verse. The sages say, Vayam tu na vitripyama uttama shloka vik. We never tire. We never tire hearing about you. Why? Yatrin vatam rasa jnanam. Your jnan, knowledge of you, is infused with rasa. This is not just jnan. This is not dry. This is not just intellectual gymnastics. This is rasa. We live for rasa. And therefore, swadu, swadu, pade, pade, at every step I'm experiencing newer taste. So you'll see that when the great devotees are asking the same question, or seemingly, it's not that they're looking for something new, but what they're looking for is how to expertly excavate the rasa, the unending rasa that is within that answer and understanding. Anandam buddhivardhanam pratipadam purna amrita svadhanam. Because it's an ocean which can be endlessly excavated for jewels. And therefore, for them, it's not like, oh, that answer doesn't work for me anymore. Is there a better one now? It's like, that was amazing. Tell me more. Eho bhaiya, aage kaho aar. Isn't it? Mahaprabhu tells Rai Ramananda, he says, yeah, it's good, it's good. Tell me more, tell me more. And even when he says, Eho haya, you've got it, but still tell me more. And then Mahaprabhu looks at Ramananda and he says, Ami eka batul, tumi dvitiya batul, ata eva amai tomai hoya samatul. Mahaprabhu says, Ami eka batul, I'm one madman. Tumi dvitiya batul, you are one second madman. Ata eva amai tomai, between me and you, hoya samatul, there's no difference. When one mad person comes together with another mad person, mad things happen. Because yachrin vatam rasa jnanam svadu svadu padei padei. So the residents of Kulinagram are not just intellectual gymnasts. They are great devotees and they understand Mahaprabhu is an ocean of mercy, an ocean of wisdom, an ocean of rasa. And the great devotees, they know how to milk the cow, isn't it? It's like when the sages come to, not the sages, when Parikshit comes to Sukadev and he asks this question, like, I'm about to die, what should I do? Sukadev is so enthused to speak that he just launches into all these verses in the first four chapters of the second canto, the three chapters. The third chapter is pure devotional service, the change in heart. It's finished. In three chapters, Sukadev Goswami clocks it. Sorry, no, Wembley. A bit of Wembley jargon now and again comes out. He basically just fulfills the whole thing. Parikshit is there, he's like, come on man, I got like 7 days left. You can't stop talking now. I said, everything's said. Therefore, he said, quick, ask a question. You got to draw some more out of this person. He's like a mine of jewels. Keep the guy talking. By all, by hook or by crook, keep this guy talking. So, anyway. With that, I'll stop talking. I think we should stop here because time is going on. So thank you all very, very much. Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande.